created the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
You know, this is the Brian Callen, and I usually introduce myself when I do the 10-minute podcast as Brian the Kid Callen. People say, Brian, how'd you get a name like The Kid? Like, who gave you that nickname? And I always say, I gave it to myself. Okay? Gave it to myself. Because I choose to believe that I have tight-fitting skin and look insanely young. My guest, Hunter Motz, who you guys will be... Hunter's, I think, the smartest guy I know. At least he's a polyglot, and he got his degree from Harvard in what?
Biochemistry.
Biochemistry, and he studies languages. I'm studying languages now, but I'm studying groups of languages. Fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself. And we have, and Hunter's going to be helping me get guests in, because Hunter knows far more interesting people than I do. One of whom is David Kwong, ladies and gentlemen. David Kwong he has a name like that because he's Jewish and Chinese. That means he's smart as shit, everybody. Huh? Huh? It means he makes things and he controls all the money. Oh, God, racist humor. Racist humor on the Brian Callen Show. David, before you even talk, I'm just going to go through some things. David was coined the illusionist for intellectuals by the Wall Street Journal. Makes me want to punch him in the fucking face, to be honest with you, but I like it. Also is Hollywood's favorite trickster. But you went to Harvard as well.
Yes.
You studied the history of magic.
Yeah, I was a history major. They don't exactly let you declare.
I was going to say,
history of magic.
I was a history major too. So, but I didn't study magic. But I know that David Blaine, who I had on the podcast recently, loves magic and loves the history of magic and has a library full of books, most of which he can't read because they're written in Latin. Yeah. So I think he just likes having them. But you actually have really studied. I mean, how far back have you gone with magic?
Well, first of all, I think anyone who truly loves the art becomes familiar with the giants,
because it's reverence for your ancestors.
On the shoulders that they stand on, and you know, Blaine has an amazing collection. His friend and partner Bill Kalush has an incredible library in New
York.
That's
who really is the guy. Yeah.
David Copperfield has an incredible museum in Las Vegas, and I have like 4 books at home.
He's a pup.
I did study it in college and continue to study it now. And what's funny is that the Harvard History Department is now completely on board with saying that I studied the
history of magic.
Yeah, because they're like, look, you can be a history major and you don't have to become a lawyer. You can be a magician.
Yeah.
You know?
That's actually
so
awesome.
I go back and I perform for the department all the time.
Yeah. Do you really? Pick a card, everybody. Pick a card. Yeah. Well, what's funny about magic is like David Blaine's next special. He's doing magic for Bill Gates and Stephen Hawking. And what's funny is that magic is the great equalizer. Everybody goes, how the fuck did you do that? And that's kind of what's so fun, that no matter how intellectual, how many books you've read, you can still be wowed and fooled and fall for the illusion. I mean, it kind of like brings everybody together. It's really interesting to see the reaction. My buddy Brett Ernst does a joke about the only time black people are not cool is when they see magic, because they're like, oh shit, what the fuck, you know. And in a way, what's funny about watching his special, like if you see like certain people from different demographics, they do react differently. Maybe might be way more, maybe more. I noticed that a lot of black people, when he does their they run away from the trick.
Yeah.
But white people will do the same thing. They'll walk away from the trick. So it seems to be like, depending on what your socioeconomic, what your cultural background is, we all react to the same in magic, which we all go, how did you do that or something? But we do express it maybe a little more forcefully depending on what ethnic group
we come
from.
Well, I lived in Hong Kong for a while, and the Asian audience has their own set of reactions too. It's much more contained.
It is. It's subdued, right?
Yeah, it is.
I love it.
It's frustrating. It's hard.
Oh, shit.
What do they do usually? What is the...
You know what? There's just this kind of... this gasp of awe that seems like, just look at any kind of YouTube video.
They and cover their
always,
mouths.
It's always just like, oh.
That's so funny. That's
I've heard that noise I don't before know. On the internet. I'm not sure
exactly.
Where.
Exactly. Well, that's Asians having sex. But that's that
but
is.
Anyway, I can make that joke because I'm Asian.
I was going to say, yeah. Okay, yeah. We've gotten very racist on this show already. Or risky. But is there a magic trick that is the greatest magic trick of all time?
Well, how do I approach that? There's legendary, there's mythical legendary tricks. The, you know, one of my favorites is the East Indian rope trick, and that's you know, centuries and centuries old, where no one's actually seen it, but they know somebody who has seen it.
And that's, awesome!
You know,
all liars.
And
by
that's,
the way,
and that's when a rope stands straight up. You know, often it's conjured that way by a snake charmer,
mm-hmm.
and then it stiffens, and then there's different accounts of it, but often the fakir will. Or the faker, however you say it, will climb up and disappear into the clouds, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it never happened. But keep going.
Yeah. But my best friend saw it, so it must be real.
Can you do that trick or no?
I can't. It's been done. It's been done famously on stage.
Oh,
yeah,
it has.
Yeah, yeah. But. I don't
anything yeah. anything you can think of can be figured
that's,
out.
That's a good way to put it. We often think of the effect first, and then we reverse engineer the method.
Mm.
So you're a lot like Area 51.
exactly. What is the? How often? And I don't know. You can't reveal too many things, but how often are things done with mirrors? It's a technique.
We use them sometimes. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Brian, you're asking the girl to give up her secrets.
Have you seen?
That's true.
You should never do
you know,
that.
Now you see me, which is. You know, holding strong at the box office.
Yeah, you were. What did you do? On
well,
that?
I was the head magic consultant on it, so that this thing has been.
And who's in that
know,
movie?
My baby for years. Who's in it? The four magicians are Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, Isla Fisher,
right.
Dave Franco, Mark Ruffalo's the FBI agent that pursues them. You got Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman as villains.
How's it doing in the box office?
It's great. It's on track to. You know, knock on wood, make 100 million.
Dude, that's so awesome.
That's awesome.
And you were the magic consultant on it.
Yeah, I worked.
Which meant what?
Well, I started uniquely, I think, because of my experience as a development executive in Hollywood. I started with the screenwriters, and they brought me in to work on the story. So there was a brilliant original script by Ed Rycourt and Boaz Yakin, and then Ed Solomon came on to write, and I worked with those guys to shape the magical heists. You know, they needed these methods for robbing banks using magic. So,
I can't wait to see that movie, actually.
And then, of course, I went on set, and I was in New Orleans for 6 months teaching all these actors sleight of hand and then building illusions.
Do you think that the stuff that happens in the movie could ever be used? Theoretically, I guess.
There are principles that could certainly be used. But, you know, I don't want to spoil too much, but there's some mirrors in that, too. So,
okay.
You'll to get back to your original question.
Now, you originally worked as well as a development executive at DreamWorks. Is that right?
Yeah, I was in their story group.
Uh-huh.
And then I ended up working for Louis Leterrier, who was the director. So I was developing the film with him.
Well, see, this is what's interesting about you. You're not just a magician. You are also somebody that in and I watched this on this clip that you gave me, which is fascinating. You can and you can create a crossword puzzle, and you'll get somebody to pick a card. They pick the card. They don't tell you what it is, and then not only do you create a crossword puzzle, which usually takes a long time. Like the guy at the New York Times was saying, crossword puzzle.
Yeah, Will Shortz.
Will Shortz
said that, you know, just somebody who can come up with a crossword puzzle that quickly is incredible in itself. But the guy in the crossword puzzle gives you the name of your card within the crossword puzzle. So you're very verbal and maybe even a savant in that sense. I like using French words.
Savant.
Yeah, savant. A savant. That's fairly unique and really it's like it feels as though that would be two different mindsets. One is a little bit more you're a performer and the other is somewhat clinical. There's a craft to magic, of course, which takes drilling and practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side is this idea of, why crossword puzzles? What the hell got you involved in that?
Well, this crossword puzzle trick is my signature effect, and thank you for bringing that up. I basically have a playing card selected, and I make a crossword puzzle as quickly as I can, and I hide hidden messages in the puzzle. Why did I cross-pollinate those together? I think it's because magic and puzzles are just inherently related. They're they're both ways of challenging the human mind and trying to,
explain the trick, because you guys can go watch it. I can't do a crossword puzzle. Okay.
Yeah,
I suck.
Start with
We're
Monday.
Make you, Brian.
People Magazine. Start with People Magazine.
Start with People Magazine. Yeah. How about this? Not going to do them at all. Yeah. But my father's obsessed.
So you're
with
more
them.
Of a Sudoku guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm Sudoku. Okay. I'm more of a Kung Fu guy, bro. I'd rather fight. But a lot of people I have on that I hang with, a lot of people that I have on this podcast wouldn't do a crossword puzzle because they're just not smart enough. All right, they're just not verbal enough.
The Monday New York Times crossword puzzle is totally accessible.
Is it really?
Yes, it gets harder through the week.
Okay.
Saturday's the hardest.
Yeah, that's Sunday, the Holy Grail, right?
Sunday kind of resets, goes back to
I would imagine, though, like anything else, there's a technique to crossword puzzles.
Yes, it's all pattern recognition, and you get familiar with the clues, and the more
and
you do.
Can you usually get a crossword puzzle, like the Saturday crossword puzzle? Can you fill that in pretty quickly?
Saturday's tough. Saturday can sometimes take me all day. It depends how hard it is. But, Monday...
By the way, I love that David's like, Saturday can take me all day. What did you do your Saturday? I wrestled with the New York Times crossword puzzle
and
all
I
day long.
Beat it.
And I beat it. I slew it. And then I worked a magic trick into it. So fuck you.
But the other thing is you've also designed New York Times crossword puzzles
LA
Times crossword puzzles and all sorts of – I mean there's
– I had one in the New York Times about a month ago. It was a Friday puzzle and I hid the – I didn't hide it. I put the Seven of Diamonds in the puzzle as a secret advertisement for Now You See Me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Very cool.
We were actually hiding playing cards all over the media. So if you look at the Now You See Me one sheet, the billboard, the poster that's up – in Dave Franco's right hand, he's palming the Ace of Diamonds. And there's all over the web and in print, you can find the Ace through the King of Diamonds. So that's the Seven of Diamonds was in the New York Times crossword.
Why diamonds? Why was that significant?
We called it the Diamond Heist Challenge.
Okay.
Steal
and that
all the diamonds.
Wasn't that in honor of, wasn't there a heist that actually happened or something like that?
Well, there have been a lot of famous diamond heists.
Oh, but, thank you for clinging in on that. No. Yeah. Diamonds have been stolen.
Diamonds have always been stolen. Yeah. Diamonds are the number one stolen product.
Forever.
Stone, I should say.
It just seemed like stealing diamonds would be better than stealing clubs or spades.
What's funny was
find all the shovels.
Yeah, the shovels.
At Home Depot, the Home Depot heist.
What's funny about being around the two of you, you guys are so smart, I feel like I should speak this way as though I'm really intellectual. Like I'm William F. Buckley.
Brian's sipping some Earl Grey right now.
Yes, exactly.
With a slice of lemon.
Exactly.
Hot.
Not tequila, as I usually do. When you hear stories about like these wizards and their kings, and I wonder if wizards were the original magicians who had people believing that they were actually magic. Is there any truth to that? You haven't read that?
No, I...
What are your thoughts on...
No idea what you're talking about.
What are your thoughts on fucking wizards?
Harry Potter, yay or nay?
Well, when David was doing magic in Haiti, they were wearing things on their heads in this village because they were afraid that their spirits were going to come into their head. And there are certain parts of the world where... I mean, by the way, not just Haiti. I was with a stuntman, and he goes, I don't know, that guy... I think that guy's actually magic, bro. I wouldn't be around him. And I go... Excuse me? And he goes, I think he might be tapped into some satanic shit. Hey, bro, you got to stop talking to me. I was like, you believe in magic, do you? But it's really powerful, man.
Yeah, I've seen those clips, and Blaine goes there, and people are astonished with what he can do.
Yeah.
And it reminds me, there's a really cool story from magic history. Jean-Robert Houdin, and Houdin is the
Houdin.
Magician... From whom Houdini took his name.
Oh.
Right? Houdini, adding the I was meant like Houdin. Right?
Oh, really?
So Houdin was, Robert Houdin was considered the father of modern magic. He took magic off the streets. He put on, evening clothes, white tie and tails, and would perform in a theater, right, in France. And he went down to Algeria, this is 19th century, to quell the Algerian rebellion. Mm. And it was really very much like this, the same kind of thing. It was to demonstrate to the local populace there that their shamans were
fakers,
were feeble compared to what the French could do.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Wow. And
big
did it
magic.
Work?
It worked.
Fuck, yeah. Dude.
He put on a magic show, and you know, he had mastered electromagnetism, and there were so many things that people didn't quite understand yet.
That's really screwy.
Yeah.
That would be very scary. If you don't know any better, when somebody seems to be tapped into the sort of supernatural, you know, that's the one thing you have trouble fighting. Yeah. You know, I mean, that feels like, I would abuse the shit out of that down. Is there a magician among all of you who is considered just the one who people kind of, you know, when he walks into a room, that you kind of the awe-inspiring one, the greatest magician, period? Is there a greatest magician living right now? Would that be David Copperfield?
I mean, Copperfield is an incredible success and a legend, and he still performs 500 shows a week. It's unbelievable.
He performs 500 shows a week.
Not a week. A year.
You said a week.
Yeah.
You said a week, which is its magic
trick. That's how magical he is. He can be in 500 places.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
He does 15 a week.
15 a
week?
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, so he loves it. And he does it in Vegas?
Yeah, at the MGM.
So he just can't get enough. He just loves performing. It's not the money. He's obviously got a lot of money.
He definitely doesn't. Yeah, he just loves it. He's always innovating and putting incredible new stuff in his show. And Penn and Teller are I know I revere them a lot. They are I love.
Are they legit magicians?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. And the way they break down magic intellectually is incredible.
I haven't seen
David
it.
Blaine. You know, those guys are the real legends. And
and Blaine as well.
Oh yeah,
my boy.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people rag on Chris Angel.
Yeah,
but. I don't.
I do because I don't like the way he dresses.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like.
But you know who does? Most people under the age of 24.
That's right. Yeah.
And I got to say, I respect Chris for bringing magic to a younger generation. And
I'm sure he's a good guy. I'm sure if I had him on my podcast, I'd love him. I mean, I'm sure I don't like making fun of anybody, especially who's really successful like that. The guy obviously worked his ass off.
Yeah,
I mean, looks great. If I had a body like that, maybe I'd wear, like, netting or whatever it is he wears.
He gets criticized a lot for not innovating things, but...
Oh, okay. So he takes magic from...
I'm not going to participate in that debate, but I will say that I think anyone that...
Unlike us.
Anyone that can deliver magic in a new way, you know, gets my respect, and
That's the whole name of the game when it comes to anything artistic, in my opinion. Yeah. You know, stand-up, I write jokes all the time where... I know they would work, but they don't necessarily, they're a little reductionist, they're derivative, they're not mine, and so I don't do them, you know, and if I ever do them, a little part of me dies.
It's a very, tough,
what is that
very
little part,
competitive
Brian?
World.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah, the magic world is that overlap happens all the time, and people accuse each other of stealing tricks and methods, and or not giving credit to the proper person who came up with it.
Are you interested in being a magician, like a very famous magician, or are you interested in doing? You're working on lots of different things. Story? Or you want to be a screenwriter?
You know, it's just this ever evolving hybrid right now.
You're trying to find it.
No, I think I've found it. It's this fusion of magic and puzzles, and I'm not sure whether it's my one-man show will be a Vegas show or an off-Broadway New York show, but it's...
And then in addition, you're also producing other movies. Like, you've got a project lined up with J.J. Abrams.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And then you just consulted on this Jeremy Renner movie.
Yeah, it's a James Gray-directed film called The Immigrant, and it's a... an Ellis Island story. Marion Cotillard is a... Polish, I think, immigrant, and it's about her struggle in the Bowery of New York. And,
mm-hmm.
and Jeremy Renner plays a turn of the century magician who is kind of her knight in shining armor.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Now, the other thing that I wanted to ask you as well is that I know that you consulted on Paranormal Activity 4.
Yes,
and that the director didn't want to use CG. To create the levitation effect. He actually wanted to, like, do it for real with magic.
Yeah, Henry Joost and Ariel Schumann directed Paranormal 4 and 3, and I actually pitched this to Henry over a Scrabble game.
Uh-huh.
We were playing Scrabble at the Roosevelt Hotel.
You play Scrabble.
So cool.
You're probably really good at Scrabble. So,
oh, he knows some really good Scrabble words, too.
Yeah, yeah.
We can do a little
bit. No,
game.
I'm not playing you in Scrabble.
But
fucking, I'll jiu-jitsu with you. I'm not fucking doing Scrabble.
If I start losing,
I'll just throw you in a headlock.
But anyway, yeah, Henry and Rel, sorry, that's Ariel, but we call him Rel.
Oh, right. Naturally.
If you're in the know, if you're in the know, you call him Rel.
Dropping French names. Yeah. And
those guys directed Catfish, and... You know, Catfish TV show is incredibly successful right now. but anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. Paranormal, that whole series, they describe it as a celebration of practical effects. And, by the way, the first one scared the shit out of me.
Yeah,
it was so good. But
Brian's a brave man, so
but those
you
sheets,
know.
Brave you shit. Know, the bed sheets sliding off the bed, you know, that's someone with some fishing line. Like it's really
simple stuff.
It's simple stuff. And
well, why didn't he want to use CGI? Why just for money? And just he wanted to do a real magic trick or what?
You know what? Money is always an issue. They are
they're low budget.
They're low budget, which is you know incredible what they churn out at the box office. Yeah. But it's also like they want to adhere to that philosophy of
does your business card say puzzle maker, magician, producer, story consultant?
What does it say? It says the Misdirectors Guild on it, which is my you like that? It's a little play on words.
Yeah.
For you.
Do you play an instrument?
Piano.
You do?
Yeah.
Is that from your Chinese side or your Jewish side?
Both.
Probably both. Yeah.
I mean, they were both musicians or
You grew up,
and they said, guess what you're getting? Straight A's. Guess what else you're getting? You're getting fucking lessons in piano.
Yeah.
All right?
And violin.
Guess what you're not getting a lot of? Sunlight.
Yeah.
All right? Because better to have a big brain than brown skin.
And cancer.
Let's play a game. How many times over the course of this podcast will Brian confuse the word musician and magician?
We're up to two.
I know.
But that's Brian's only magic trick.
It's all the same
confusing
shit.
Words.
All the same shit, bro. Same shit.
I hear that like probably five times a week. But I hear you're a musician.
Musician.
Although I have to say that if you've obviously got a big brain, you play the piano and you can do magic, you're doing not a bad looking kid, so you're doing pretty well. I mean, you know, do you ever kind of bring your piano on stage or just to the coffee shop?
That's in the works. The playing the piano and performing magic at the same time.
There are girls that are going to kind of be into you when you're multifaceted like that. I took the piano for a year and didn't go anywhere with it. And I realized that I had to be reborn. It's like boxing. My buddy's a pro boxer and he started showing me some stuff. And I was like, I had to start this when I was 13. I see. I'm going to get punched in the face to get better? Nah, never going to happen. It's like my instructor was this concert pianist, and she was from China, and she was teaching me these things. And I went, I knew enough about from martial arts, just like drilling and what it takes, or just jiu-jitsu, like how long it takes to make it your own language. And as I'm playing the piano, I was like, hold on. Oh, I don't have time for this. Yeah. I'm not, I'm too old now. Fuck this. I don't give a shit. I was trying to write a play about a piano player, shitty play. You would not have been a story consultant on it because the story didn't go anywhere. You would have gone like this. What the fuck is this?
It turns out that to blend talents, you have to have them first.
That's right. That's exactly. Yeah, you do have to have talents first. But you have cross pollinated these two things, man. Magic and
three things.
And crossword puzzle and movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say actually that they're all forms of storytelling. That's kind of the glue that bonds all of them. Yeah.
There are magic tricks that you see that, you know, always amaze people, like reading minds, quote unquote.
Uh-huh.
You know, pick a card and then you tell him what card it is.
Dave is doing that right now. He is reading our minds.
He's reading my mind.
That's right.
My mind is
which
really,
is why I'm wearing tinfoil.
My mind is fucking easy to read. My mind basically is just, you know, girls, food, and fucking sleep. You know,
I think that's everyone's mind, to be honest.
Yeah. What? Give me some books. Are you reading any books right now? We always recommend books on this podcast.
I'm not. I don't read.
No.
You know what?
That's a great answer.
No, I'm embarrassed to say that.
I don't read. Not a reader.
You know what? I haven't read a book for pleasure in years because when you're reading screenplays all the time,
right.
That's what reading gets associated with work. Unfortunately, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I don't have to read, I rather do a crossword puzzle.
Yeah. Can you tell of a...
And since one of those takes all day, you know,
it's a major commitment. Since one of them is all day, when I'm not playing the piano or doing a crossword puzzle...
I lock myself in a room for 24 hours and do the Saturday crossword puzzle.
That's exactly right. It takes great patience, though. I guess you were raised with the notion of just because something's hard doesn't mean you quit. Which I hear a lot of.
I definitely echoes in my mind that I always have to go the extra mile. I think I remember my mother keeps saying that.
Yeah. I've never heard anybody who was successful who didn't grow up with that sort of ethos or that work ethic. I mean, you know,
except for Kim Kardashian.
Except for Kim Kardashian, made $62 million last year, something crazy. But because she's got a bone structure that cuts light well. God
bless
her.
It's not so much the bones; it's what's on top of them.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. Not that I noticed. Yeah, but I mean, it's true.
Is that the technical term?
Badonkadonk? Yeah, that's in the medical literature. You can find it.
That's not going to make the Sunday crossword.
Badonkadonk.
That's what you think.
Badonkadonk.
I've been talking to Will Shorts. Sending him recommendations, like get this word in there.
Yeah. Have you read Hunter Mott's book, The Straight A Conspiracy?
I haven't read it, but no. I'm
but you
I'm
know
very,
about it.
Oh yeah. He and Katie are good friends of mine, and
because Hunter's book, you guys, you've been on the podcast before, basically subscribes to the idea or the notion is that there's no such thing as being smart. You just gotta the emotional context in which you approach something has everything to do with whether or not you're going to learn something. I'm taking French from Michel Thomas, the late Michel Thomas, and the first thing he says when you learn French, he says the first thing you need to do is relax.
Yeah.
And here's the rules. No trying to memorize.
Well, that's the thing, is you focus on trying to understand it rather than just like remembering random facts.
I'm obsessed with the deconstruction process of learning. Tim Ferriss, who's been on the podcast too, is a big fan of that. Michel Thomas, obviously. I take jiu-jitsu from a guy, my buddy Kieran, who I've never had anybody break down the principle of grappling, which, you know, I know is not the most exciting thing, but what's fascinating about it is more than grappling is, you know, he can beat the shit out of so many guys, and he just says, control the head and hips. Control the head and hips. Everything's head and hips. If you control the head and hips, no matter who it is on a human being, they're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. You build a house from that sort of platform. It's exactly like writing a script or a book. You need to know what you're writing about. There's got to be a platform and a basis for that. And I would imagine magic is the same thing, or any technique that you have for something is probably, like you said, you deconstruct from, you want the effect and you go backwards.
Yeah, and as you said at the very beginning of this podcast, you mentioned preparation, and it's really all preparation, right? We often say that something will take, you know, hundreds of hours of practice, but it plays out in a performance in only a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
And it's just to make, it's like anything, making something look effortless. And I think that applies to my show and the puzzle component of my show in particular. I've spent so much time memorizing all these patterns, you know, that I can create these puzzles in real time on stage.
You know, this is very strange. I mean, in a way, it's odd. Like your interest is very unique.
Well, yeah, thanks. I think I'm the first one to really frame magic in this way. And when I launched my website a couple of years ago.
What's your website?
DavidKwongMagic.com.
Yeah.
Little plug, thank you.
K-W-A-O-N-G. K-W-O-N-G, DavidKwongMagic.com.
But the point is that someone said, you have to choose between magic and puzzles. You can't have them both up there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I wasn't sure at first, but now it just like...
I would have said the same
thing. There's a fusion now, you know, and it's really because I think magic and puzzles are inherently related. And they're both ways of, you know...
But, I mean, what did you want to do when you were younger?
Well, I've always loved magic, but I was never willing to take that leap of faith to be a professional magician. And I think it's because, you know, you have two parents who are PhDs.
Oh, your parents are PhDs? The fuck? No wonder. What a nightmare.
You go to Harvard, and it's just kind of like, now you're a magician. It's a hard thing to do. And I've always held on to the conventional job. I always, like, I wanted to be in the milieu of entertainment. So I did HBO.
So he became a development executive at DreamWorks Animation.
I always held down that desk job, right? And really, it's all kind of like happened by surprise. Like, I think my my subconscious was like my passions. They were like working.
But this is interesting to me because, you know, a lot of people get caught, and I have a lot of people come to me and say, well, you know, I'm trying to be sensible, or you know, parents want you to do something sensible. I don't want my kids to be actors. I'm going to clip those wings right quick, you know. But you can't, you know, but there is something called passion, and there is also something called, you know, a calling, you know, when you've got that voice, that inner compass that's telling you to do something that, because you think about it anyway. A lot of times there's something you think about, whether you want to or not. It's on your mind all the time.
Yeah, you know what I would say, though? Like, I couldn't have plotted out this trajectory, but everything I've done has been relevant, and I found a way to make everything work, and taking those skills that I learned in development, story structure and character and narrative, and applying those to magic and getting involved. I mean, really, the springboard for me was Hollywood, was like working in the movies. Mm-hmm. And I was able to just for fun on the side, I started consulting on Hollywood magic projects. And then all of a sudden, Now You See Me went into production. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I found myself quitting my desk job. And then all of a sudden I'm doing magic full time. Yeah. So I couldn't have plotted it out, but you know, everything's relevant. And now I'm like on a soapbox here, but I feel like a liberal arts education where you're learning, you know, from all different fields, and you're learning from your peers, and you know, it all kind of comes together, and you keep all these doors open until your passions can
I agree.
That's what Steve Jobs really talks about in his Stanford commencement speech, right? You know, because he tells the story about how, you know, when he dropped out of college, he was taking this calligraphy class, and, you know, he was like, I have no idea where this was going to lead. I was couch surfing. I was broke and all of that sort of stuff. But then years later, it all fits together because as he's developing basically all the word processing programs, he's like, oh, fonts, calligraphy. Like, I thought this was so cool. Let's put this in.
Wow.
And that's why all computers now have all of these crazy fonts, because he took a random calligraphy class that he then later brought in. And I think the interesting thing, too, is, you know, because obviously I also get parents talking to me all the time about, like, my kid's interested in this thing, but I don't see how that's going to lead to a job. But the thing that we're also aware of is that what we really need in order to succeed nowadays is innovation,
mm-hmm.
right? But at the same time, we're like, where does innovation come from? Well, really where innovation comes from is people like Dave Kwong, who have three different interests that they then blend together, and they produce something that we've never seen before. They produce, you know, a crossword puzzle magic trick, or a Scrabble magic trick.
Or a story.
Yeah, or a story, yeah. Exactly. Or Steve Jobs, who takes, like, random calligraphy, puts it with computers, and, I mean, that was the
I'm such a huge believer in that. You know, it's funny you're talking this way, because I spend way too much time rolling, what's the matter?
No, I want to sit straight up now.
Oh, go ahead.
Can I just do this?
Bring it up. But I just feel as though, you know, I why am I rolling around on a mat and working on, like, submission techniques or playing the drums or learning French when, you know, and then doing stand-up? Well, I'm just a huge believer that it finds its way into whatever you're really trying to do and express. And that's why I'm such a huge believer. I always tell, like, young people or even anybody who's kind of trying to find themselves or whatever, I can't stand the notion of, like, well, I'm trying to find myself. Look, find yourself through action. What do you want to do? What do you want to be doing? You know, what is it you want to do? What is it that you want to do? What is it you know, you can go through what your desire is. You want a big house and all that shit. But I'd rather say, what is it you want to do on a daily basis? Or what do you want to look back on and say you've accomplished? Do you want to know that you've my buddy's a Marine and he was going to college and he didn't know what to do. And I said, what do you want to come out of college with? I said, do you want to know, do you want to be able to speak Spanish? Yes. Do you want to be able to play the piano? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Go that way. Try that. You know, try to do that. And then other things will, I think, you will have not only context, but probably you will learn the art of learning. You will, through those endeavors, you'll learn how to approach something in a better way. You'll learn how to deconstruct the learning process and become more of a sponge. That's really the way it is, I think. I mean,
I just think
I agree with everything Brian says.
Do you fucking Harvard nerds agree or not? What is with the silence? No. I told you.
Just Brian has Dave in a headlock right now.
I know. Come on, Dave. I'm threatened by his brain. Fuck you.
I just think forward momentum is key. And mm-hmm. as long as you apply yourself and you're learning, it's going to come back into play at some point.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think, but you've also got to immerse yourself in people who are have been there before, or who are who have educated themselves on what's been thought and said before you. I mean, that's important, because a lot of times, you know, my buddy said, well, I said, well, he's been doing jiu-jitsu for so long, how can he not be good? And he said, my mother's been driving for 40 years. She's still not a good fucking driver. You know, yes, you know, practice makes permanent. Doesn't necessarily make perfect.
You got to know. Perfect practice makes perfect.
Yeah.
But that's the benefit of, like, you know, you learning jiu-jitsu from someone like Kieran, right? He can take all of those years of work and sum it up in one principle.
Yes.
Control the heads and head and hips. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Josh Waitzkin calls it chunking. Like, he can...
Yeah.
He can... Actually, he's actually an amazing grappler. And with chess, too, he could see what you were going to do. He's been there before. He's recognized those. So he can chunk huge pieces of information. Whereas for most of us, it's piecemeal. It's just like being fluent in that language.
Yeah. There's a famous study that was done by this Dutch scientist named De Groot, right? And he basically, he took chessboards and he would lay out the pieces on the chessboard. And if you take someone who's a really good chess player, they can memorize that board instantly.
Yeah.
But if you then take a chessboard and you arrange the pieces in an illegal combination, in a set of moves that isn't possible in chess, their memory is no better than an average person's.
Yep. So, because it's a pattern.
Yeah, that's right. But that really tells you so much about learning, and in terms of what you're saying with Michelle Thomas and all that stuff, it's all about really understanding
the
pattern.
It's Michelle Thomas.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Do you want to say Savant again?
Yes, Savant and Michelle Thomas. He's fucking dropping all the French names over there, David.
It's understanding, like, what's the pattern? How does this really work? And I mean, you know.
But that takes the mystery. That's what's great about that, is it takes the mystery out of learning. It doesn't create, doesn't make it such a huge mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So much of what stops us is this notion of the mystery of, you know, Jesus, man, he's really smart. That guy went to Harvard. He's got all. Well, no. Hold on. There's a system. It's just like being educated. Mm-hmm. If you look at academics, they actually all speak the same language.
Well,
they've followed the same trajectory, and then they branch off into their specialities. You know,
and they know how to ask the same sort of questions. Like, they're historians. Like, when you study historians, they always ask the same sort of questions. Like, who's the author? What's their perspective? What's their bias? Mm-hmm. What events mm-hmm. happened before? What's the context? And then, you know, and I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, Dave's not going to tell us, but right now he's probably like, he has a few key principles that he comes back to as he reverse engineers techniques and tricks and all that sort of stuff. But the magician doesn't know.
Yeah, you're looking at me in a weird way.
Well, I was going to ask you.
Like,
well,
what is David Kwong up to right
well,
now?
Well, yeah, because I was going to ask you this. Being a magician, I know David Blaine. I've been around him enough when he's wowed a lot of people. And one of the things I know is that he has a very good understanding of how most people emotionally relate to the world. They have certain things. You can predict certain things about people, most of us, when we went through a traumatic time, when was the most influential time of our lives, what are we going to look at, what are we not going to look at, what are we going to notice, depending on what you do versus what are you not going to notice, those kinds of things. How do you suggest something to somebody without letting them know you're doing that,
mm-hmm.
right? So you get a real sense, probably, of human.
We all look at the world. Magicians look at the world in a different way. We certainly take advantage of situations, and we're aware of what other people's
tendencies.
Perceptions are. And mm-hmm. yeah, sure.
And do you have to tailor that to an audience to a certain extent? Like, do you pick up, like, in the same way that a comedian, a stand-up comedian has to read the room?
Yeah, I bet you do. I mean, I certainly think audiences are very different, although with a magic trick, it's pretty immovable.
It's probably fairly universal.
You know which audience members to choose. You know mm-hmm. who will react well to something. I mean, look mm-hmm. at hypnotists, right? Hypnotists,
yeah.
they have to narrow down their subjects to... They call up 20 people on stage, and they, you know, end up with... The top six people who are the most suggestible.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is? Does hypnotism really work?
So you want to look out
yeah.
for strippers?
I mean, we don't fully understand it, but yeah, it really
you
is.
See people actually humping and having orgasms on stage, humping yeah. a chair. Is yeah. that really true, or is she just? I mean,
it's a mix of things. It's some people are really susceptible to it. Other people, they're playing along because they don't want to break the wall, but
you know,
but you could argue it's all the same thing.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, everything. I certainly think, I always talk about stand-up comedy as a magic trick in a way, and actors always talk about my bag of tricks. You know, when Daniel Day-Lewis was saying people want to know what my process is because they want to know what the machinations are behind the magic. Well, look, man, I basically do what I do, which means I wear other people's clothes and say other people's lines surrounded by 50 other strangers for 3 months because I'm basically ashamed of being a boring middle-class Englishman. Tired of myself. It's not fun. I'd rather be somebody else. Bingo. So if I stuck flowers up my ass and did cartwheels and that was my process, who gives a shit? He goes, it doesn't matter. What matters is the end result. Stand-up is the exact same way. When I got you, I've got you thinking one thing and I'm going to turn it on you in another way. You're with me and then you think I'm going here and I go here, and what actually makes you laugh a lot of times is surprise.
It's storytelling, man. It's all storytelling. Yeah. And that's what a good magic trick does, right? That's what a good puzzle does.
A good story does.
What a good movie does.
Yeah. It's, revelations. Yeah. Revelations.
Mm-hmm. And now you see me is the perfect combination of all those.
Yeah.
That movie really does operate like a puzzle. All these pieces kind of in plain view, and they all come together at the end. There's twists and turns.
We have an endless appetite for that as human beings. Endless. And what's amazing is there's an infinite combinations of that if it's done well, right?
Yeah. And even the simplest of all card tricks, if you tell the right story, you know, it's more effective than if you were just demonstrating the dexterity of your fingers.
Yeah.
But if you're taking a king and you're moving it through a pack of cards, you know, there's a story to tell there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, David Blaine was doing magic for my 5-year-old, and so another my friend's 5-year-old, and he had them involved in it. You know, they were kind of choosing, and they were saying what they wanted and stuff. But they were so wowed by they didn't even know what the hell was going on. You know, and that never leaves you, man. In a way, magic brings out the child in all of us. Thank you for echoing me.
Children,
thank you for
children
echoing.
Sometimes will bust. That's a term we use, like bust the trick. Easier than adults.
Yeah, because
they're not as misdirected the same way. They don't have the same assumptions.
They're more open.
Yeah, they're like, you have 2 cards. I'm like,
damn you, child.
Damn it.
No so fucking children.
You get heckled by 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
Also, what is this kid doing in my living room right now?
Yeah. This is weird. I'm trying to practice. I got some strange 5-year-old in my living room. This is Paranormal Activity 6. So weird. Can you levitate?
Not really. I can do the...
Oh, my God. He just started levitating, right?
Jesus. Holy shit. And by levitating, I mean his dick. We were having such an intellectual. I had to bring it down to the level of a goat. See what I mean, David? Yeah. I'm multifaceted too, motherfucker. I can go high and I can go low.
Really low.
No pun intended. God, we're killing it. I wonder if people are holding their stomachs laughing. Did you learn anything out there?
No response.
No response. We don't have any. It's not a live show. So what is you want to just keep doing more of this?
Yeah, the one man show. It's called The Lexicon. It's basically a puzzle based magic show, and what I do is I perform 10 or so different tricks. They all have a hanging piece of a puzzle. You may not realize it at the time, but they all add up to something at the end. So this has been my.
But give me an example, like
you have
do
a
it for
Scrabble
me.
Trick, right?
Yes, that's a great example. I will borrow a dollar bill from the audience early in the show. I'll do a trick with it. And then that's a lot of what I do is I do a trick with something, and that miniature story's over. It goes to completion. People are satisfied because that dollar bill has disappeared and has reappeared in an impossible location, like in a piece of fruit or something. And then maybe 20 minutes later in the show, I'll do another trick. I do this thing with Scrabble tiles, and I'll form all these words, and then I assign numerical values to the Scrabble tiles, right? Like S is 1, T is 1, V is 4. And those letters will add up to a 8-digit number, which is the serial number of the dollar bill from 20 minutes ago. Jeez. So it's kind of this...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Everything's tied together.
I'm glad you explained that because it's hard to really understand what the fuck you're talking about with magic and puzzles. I mean, it's you know...
Yeah.
I'm like, all right. I don't know.
But it's always... I mean, it's the same thing as a good movie or a good story. It's layers within
you're
layers.
You're connecting,
yeah.
connecting
layers
the dots.
Within layers within layers.
It's like pie. It's like the movie Pie. The number for life. Anyone? 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 Way to go, Brian. I was just old magic trick.
Do you play Scrabble at all?
Yeah, I do. I lose all the time. How about that?
Are you a Words with Friends guy?
What's that?
Or are you a Words with Friends guy?
What do you mean?
Do you like Words with Friends or Scrabble? Or maybe you're a Bananagrams.
Words with Friends is an app that the cool kids are playing nowadays.
Yeah, technology. Don't do any of that, all right? Don't do any of that. I'm not a big gamer.
The iPhone?
Yeah, I got the iPhone. Yeah. The only thing I do is I play Temple Run, but I get beat by my daughter, so I don't do it anymore. Fuck that stupid game. I hate video games. Are you a gamer?
Not in the digital sense. Yeah.
Okay. More, I'm surprised.
He's a crossworder.
More in the parlor sense.
Yeah.
He plays a mean hand of gin rummy.
Yeah. As he sucks on his pipe. Come on in, young man. I went to Harvard. Do you ever say Harvard?
No, I don't.
All right. Kennedy did. It's that time, I think. And I think we covered nothing, and I appreciate that. And as usual, ladies and gentlemen, you wasted another hour of your fucking day on the Brian Callen Show.
When you could have done 1/24th of the Saturday crossword.
That's exactly right. For all my fans out there, I do a podcast with Brendan Schaub here and there called The Fighter and the Kid, because I'm the kid and he's a fighter. And we just break down the UFC and stuff and it's been doing really well. So thanks for listening. Out there, everybody. David, you have anything you want to plug?
I would just say check out some cool magic puzzle videos online. If you go to my website, davidkwongmagic.com, or just search on YouTube for David Kwong, and you'll find a cool video with Will Shorts. You'll find one with Reggie Watts. I did a very cool code-based magic trick with him.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So check him out.
The Scrabble trick is cool, too.
Good. So,
yeah.
And Motz, get Hunter Motz and Katie O'Brien's book, The Straight A Conspiracy, especially if you have children. It's very helpful, all right? And you can thank me when you see me at my show in Schaumburg, Illinois. Ladies and gentlemen, just outside of Chicago, I'll be there. Whatever you do, I won't be able to do a podcast here because I'll be in Schaumburg at the Improv, the Schaumburg Improv, and I'll be doing frickin' stand-up on the... where's my phone? Where is my phone? Anyone? I'll be doing stand-up. Just look at my website, briancallen.com. But it's July 24th, 25th, 26th, I believe. That Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I'm excited.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
Do you want your wallet back?
Ah, you bastard. I was like, how did that happen? I just saw it here.
Magic doesn't work on the radio, but I did take your wallet.
You did take my wallet.
Yeah.
That's very impressive. He stole my wallet. Oh, damn it. Where's my phone?
I
think you just misplaced that. I don't think that was magic.
I don't know, and you've left it in your car.
Yeah.
He's a genius. He got me to forget my phone in my fucking car. David Kwong, ladies and gentlemen, here all week. Enjoy your fruit compo. That's our time, ladies and gentlemen. We could just keep on talking. What time is it right now? How long have we talked for? 46 minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Man, we got a lot of ground covered. Congrats on Harvard, you both, you fucking super nerds. I'm gonna fucking Mosh, you're Dutch. You got some when you were running around, you were running across the thing, and Brendan Schaub, you were in a pair of khaki shorts with your shirt tucked in, and Brendan Schaub goes, "Kid's got quite a tailpiece on him. How about that tailpiece? Got a big ass on him. I mean, it's a muscular ass. It's not like it's a, you know, girly butt.
A badonkadonk.
You got some badonkadonk. Bring it in full circle, which is not a Scrabble word. It's not in one of David Kwong's puzzles. The badonkadonk. Thank you for your tailpiece, and thank you for your Dutch bone structure and your brain, Hunter Motson. Thank you for bringing your friend David Kwong on the Brian Callen Show, the mother of all podcasts, the podcast that won number one podcast of all time by the International Podcast / Magician / Crossword Puzzle Association. I just swallowed my own fucking spit. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter @BrianCallen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/BrianCallenComedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.